What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, we are going to dive deep into the differences between Munich and a eunuch. And we're going to do it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Ethan Klein. Here with me, Mike Duranik.
Yo.
From way downtown, and Brad Miller.
What up? And I liked the slight little pause you had after you did the cold open, almost as a, I'm proud of myself, and I want to see what you guys think of this one. It was nice. You kind of were like, ready to receive the nod or the smile or the look. So, well done on the cold open, Ethan. We were just saying off air that it's got to be a difficult task to come up with something, but you never cease to amaze.
Yeah, some days I bring my best fastball, and some days I just kind of lob a little slow pitch up there.
Well, just so that you can worry about this entire episode, I will tell you that one of our listeners is putting a lot of pressure on you for your cold open for the next episode.
Oh, goodness.
And has some very specific thoughts that I got via a text message about what it had to entail. So now you'll be thinking about that through this entire one, but we are not on to the end of the month yet. What are we doing this time?
This week we are doing our group choice for the month of May, and that is The Nice Guys. Ryan Gosling, Russell Crowe, written and directed by Shane Black, which, you know, we've done Lethal Weapon, so we've kind of lived in his world before, and we're back here now. So let's just get right into it. I somehow dethroned Mike last week. I think he was trying to throw us off the scent of his cheating. So he let me win one, and now he's going to wait until next week to kind of end the month on a high note for himself, which makes sense because next week is his pick for the month. So, Brad, it's you and me. I'll guess first. Mike will have to come in and let us know who the winner is. And this is going to be tough. I don't know why I'm starting off with the Rotten Tomatoes game because I forgot to ask you guys a question. But we'll play it, and then I'll ask you the question. We'll just change up the order this week. I am going to say that this is one of those movies that I know was well-received, and then everybody was just shocked that it really didn't make a lot of money. So I think this week is going to be one of the times that the audience is actually lower than the critic. And I am going to put it at an 85 and let Brad decide the other way on that. But I do think that this is probably something where the audience is going to be in the 70s.
So you're saying critic score 85 for Rotten Tomatoes. This is probably going to be different than how I feel about this movie after watching it. But I'm going to go 84 just because I think that 85 is way up there, and for something to hit 86 or higher has got to be really, really well received. So I'm going to go with 84 since you went with such a high number of 85.
Well, as you can see here,
nothing is loading
on my phone, and so I'm working to get there. But what I will say is, just so you are aware, 85 was exactly what I had down this month for me to guess for this, and you took the under on that, Brad?
I took the under.
84.
Okay. Well, mine did load.
Okay.
And I said that the audience was probably in the 70s, and I was correct. The audience was, and they are lower than the critics.
Oh, there you go. It just loaded for me.
The critic rating on this is a 91.
Woo!
So, got that extra stamp, the certified fresh. I end up winning, but 6% off is a pretty big gap from where usually Mike is right spot on, and we're pretty close to it. But I'll end up taking it, but a 91%. For the critics, 79% for the audience.
That was 91, well earned.
And so now, we'll take a little step back here in the order we normally do things, now that you guys know what the score is, and while you formulate in your head if they're correct or not, let me go back and ask you what your first experience was with this movie. Did you guys see it in the theaters when it came out back in 2016? Did you catch it later? Is this your first experience with it? And what did you bring into this rewatch or first watch for the podcast?
You and I had a disagreement last month when we brought this up because I said this will be the first time I've seen it, and you said no, we watched it at your house. The correct answer is this is the first time I saw it. I do remember you watching it at my house, and I remember it being on but I don't know if I was busy doing something and not paying attention. I think I fell asleep and then woke myself up in the chair and then just went up and went to bed. So I never got to see it. And so this being my first time watching it, I mean, I knew who was in it. I kind of knew a little bit about the vibe and energy of it, but I didn't know really what the plot was. So it kind of fell into what I expected, and it has a lot of elements of different films that I like, and it's kind of reaches into some films that I like, and it reminds you of them. And I was not expecting that. So, and this landed. We'll get into it later, but this landed much better for me and much higher for me than what I was expecting going into it.
Well, Brad and I have some similarities here. This was the first time I ever watched it, but the first time I watched it, I fell asleep in the chair and woke myself up and sent myself to bed. So I did finish it, however, and I knew nothing about this movie. I'd never heard of it. It took me a minute to figure out that it was The Nice Guys because I just wrote Nice Guys down. I took nothing into this at all.
This was a theater viewing for me. Saw this summer, May of 2016 with one of my buddies. He'd seen the previews, looked funny. We went and we had a great time. Laughed our heads off the entire time. Really enjoyed everything about it. I've seen it a couple times since. This is one of the ones that was always kind of in the back of my mind of rewatches to show my girlfriend. You know, I've got a list of movies that I always enjoy. Like, I'd like to introduce this movie to her. And this is one of the ones. I think I did that last fall and then got to rewatch it again a few days ago for the show. So as we transition then, kind of back towards the Rotten Tomatoes game into Is Rotten Tomatoes Correct? A 91%. That's a high number. It's rare that we get something up into the 90s. I'll kick us off since I've seen it and then get your guys' real first impressions of this movie. I think the critics are absolutely correct, and I think this movie is criminally underrated by people as a whole. I looked. They spent $50 million on this, pretty low budget, especially for having... I'm assuming most of that money went to Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, and it only made 62. So big failure at the box office. Fans having it at 79. I think that is the crime here. I do think this is a 90% movie. I have this ranked pretty high. We'll get into our personal rankings in a little bit here after this initial conversation. But I do think this is a 90% movie. I think the mystery is just engaging enough. And I think chemistry can cover up a lot of other things. And Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling have perfect chemistry as the two leads of this movie. They're hilarious together. Shane Black put together probably the best script he's ever put to paper, and the comedy bleeds through perfectly, and I just enjoy watching this movie every time I've hit play on it. So I do think it's there. Where are you guys at?
Yeah, I'm almost exactly right there with you. I have it ranked pretty high. Enjoyed it very much. I'm going 84 to try to win the game, where if it were my own pick, I would have went 86 or higher to say that. But I guess assumed that it was going to be lower. So very happy that it came in at 91. I think the critics understood exactly then what this movie was supposed to be and trying to be. And I gave it the clap because I need to rephrase that. I clapped for it.
What did you do this movie?
I clapped for it because I think that number was well reserved. Deserved. Jeez, I can't talk now. I'm giving things the clap and flustering myself.
I don't even know how to follow that.
Did you do the things to this movie that Brad did?
No, but I also didn't star in it. So, okay. In fairness, touché. I didn't have the opportunity to do much with it.
Touché.
We had the next Hollywood controversy coming out right here on the threequel. Where I had this, I thought I actually had it lower than I did, but it is at the top tier of the bottom tier of movies for me. I did not tend to like it as much. And as I reflected on why, I think that there's probably two reasons, right? One is, I am not a big Russell Crowe fan. I never have been. I've always thought he was criminally overrated. really can't tell you any movie of his that I am like, yeah, he's a great actor. He went through that period of time with Gladiator and the movies after that where he was like the king of Hollywood, and I thought that most of those movies stunk, and I thought that he was not particularly good in them. And so I think part of it is, put me with Russell Crowe in a movie and I'm going like, well, this movie probably is overrated. The second is, I've come to find as we've watched a number of these movies that these neo-noir movies are just not my genre. They don't do much for me. And so I would say, you know, it's probably that I would go more with the fans than the critics. And I would probably say that this movie feels to me like a low mid-70s. Just based off of where those movies tend to be. It's fine. It's enjoyable. It's certainly, I wouldn't argue, a rotten movie. There's a lot of good movies in the range where I have this. I think I ended up with it at 87. You know, Friday, which we watched last month, was at an 88. So, you know, it's solid, but I'm probably not going to watch it again.
Okay. For me, in my personal rankings, I ended up having it at 32. I have it right in between Collateral and The Hangover, which I think ends up being pretty perfect because this is an action comedy, and I have it right between a very dramatic action movie and a comedy. And that's kind of where I'll have it living. I just go back to that first time that I saw it. I laughed through the whole thing, and I still laughed this time, and we'll get into like little stuff where this is one of those movies that every time I've watched it, I've caught something different. Like, this time, when I watched it a couple days ago, I know I have a history of stealing you guys' favorite line, I doubt this would be it, but when he's talking to the porn star's grandma or aunt, whatever that old lady is, and he says, she's dead. We know she's dead. She is a well-known actress, and the medical examiner ID'd her himself. And, like, moved on. I'd never caught before. What he's saying is that the medical examiner watches a lot of porn. Like, just little stuff like that that I don't catch. And then this time I was like, oh, that's actually hilarious mm-hmm. that they're saying that. Like, just those little things. And I love when you have little nuggets like that that you can pick up on, you know, the third, fourth time you watch something. And this still gives me that now, 8 years later.
So let's play our own Rotten Tomatoes game. Your number came in at 31, which is pretty high. Is Brad's number higher, meaning 1 through 31,
I'm gonna assume,
or 1 through 30, or lower?
I'm going to assume you have it in your top 30.
Do you have a guess?
I would put it in the top 30 as well.
It's nice to know that there's a little bit of... I guess I don't know what I'm looking for, but just it's reaffirming to hear that someone else likes a movie nearly as much as you do.
Well, so, Mike, since you kind of already opened the door on your opinion of Russell Crowe, let's just go down that path. I mean, we all know, and we even discussed it today, when we did Gladiator on the show, I came in, that was one of my 10 favorite movies of all time, so I thought. Then we watched it for the show and talked about it, and it took quite a tumble. And I do think, I mean, as a whole on his career, I think I do lean the way that you're saying. And we kind of had this discussion last week, but this is just a very different level. He is supposed to be one of the all-timers of his generation. And when I go through his filmography, what really stands out to me is how much he looks like Brad. Though not anymore, Brad. He weighs quite a bit more than you do at this point.
This was him in 2012, so it's a decade ago, Brad. That's still not a bad thing.
Well, and I think he ate an entire Brad from the time that picture was taken.
Well, I don't know if while we're talking about how much he looks like me, I don't know if I ever shared this with you guys, but at one point, someone had the bright idea of doing I think it was called a face swap,
where you
could take a photo of two people and merge their faces together.
Yep.
So one of the students I was working with took a picture of me, and then saved a picture of Russell Crowe, hit the thing. We sent the picture to my wife, and she was kind of like, why'd you send me this picture of yourself? So the only thing that was different was my skin color right up here on the top of the forehead was a little bit darker than his, so you could tell his face was on my head. But it was enough that my own wife didn't even notice the difference between Russell Crowe's face being on my head. It's kind of uncanny, honestly. But I'm glad to hear you say that we no longer resemble each other, well, because he is hard to look at these days.
He's put on quite a bit.
Well, I mean, even if you just look at the way that he wears his beard at times, it looks very similar to you.
He's got the salt and pepper going
on. I've never seen the two of them in the same room at the same time.
No, I have not.
And so I suspect that Brad probably has been acting as Russell Crowe, and the reality is he's just holding out on us because he's worth quite a bit of money.
Well, and I think based on everything I've ever heard about Russell Crowe, Brad also has a much better grip on his anger, which is why he fell off the map for quite a while. I don't know if you guys remember that, but he has quite an issue with beating the crap out of people.
That was when South Park did the fighting around the world thing, right?
Yes.
So, I do recall that plot line.
Back to the original question, I guess, of how we feel about Russell Crowe, I think that he is someone who has fallen far from grace. I think that in some ways he tracks like Nicolas Cage to me, where his movies were very enjoyable. I didn't have a problem with Nicolas Cage until Nicolas Cage jumped the shark, and now you kind of watch a caricature of what they were a decade or two ago. And I think that I go into his movies now thinking like this is going to be bad until he proves otherwise, which is a complete 180 from where he was. And I feel like you have a higher spot for him in society and as an actor than where he really should be. And I think that's because some of those that he was in back then were so... They were big, big films, you know, that he did. And there was a run there where he was on top of the world. But then since then, just not a whole lot to speak of, I guess, from his career.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's not many actors ever. Like, I mean, Tom Hanks won 2 straight years. But I still don't think he even got nominated 3 straight years. Russell Crowe did that. I mean, he went Insider, Gladiator, Beautiful Mind, one right after the other, getting nominated for... lead actor. So, I mean, he reached a peak that not many others do professionally. And I think when I look at it, my appreciation for Russell Crowe at this point comes from the ones that people don't talk about. I mean, obviously this was a flop and it's sitting at a 79. Nobody really ever saw it. This is close to it's the movie that I would put on. If you're just going to tell me pick a Russell Crowe movie, hit play to have a good time, this would be it. The best Russell Crowe movie for me, and it reflects in my personal rankings too, is 310 to Yuma. Mm-hmm. But nobody talks about that movie, really ever. So that's where like my love and appreciation for him comes from at this point. It's the movies that are kind of forgotten about. I've only seen it once, but I remember really enjoying State of Play.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you look at Gladiator, where we're at with it now, I was never a Beautiful Mind fan. I think Cinderella Man was always overrated, stuff like that. I like American Gangster just fine, but again, not many people talk about that. So that's where I'm at. The superstar Russell Crowe, I'm not really a fan of. And I think the big difference, I see where you're going with the comparison to Nick Cage, but I think the goodwill that Nick Cage earned is that he was always still fun. Very rarely does Russell Crowe do something that's fun. I mean, even as bad as Face Off is, you can still sit and watch and laugh and enjoy the insanity of it. Russell Crowe has always just taken himself so seriously, and I think that's why I end up really enjoying this, because he doesn't take himself seriously. He is just kind of a fat, out-of-shape guy with a good right hook, and it's funny. And I think that's where my love of this comes in at.
Excuse me. So, yeah, and the funny thing is, as I look at this, he actually had a 3-year arc that I... enjoyed him in the movies in the 3 years. It started with 310 to Yuma.
Yep.
I did not mind him in American Gangster, although I think a lot of that was because I really enjoyed Denzel in that. I did not mind him in Body of Lies either.
Yeah.
And then State of Play, as you mentioned, kind of ending that 3-year arc. But I think by that point, the sheen had rubbed off of him, right? Cinderella Man and A Good Year that ended that run that probably started with L.A. Confidential, then went Insider, Gladiator, Beautiful Mind, Master and Commander, right? He was just, you know, everywhere. And every year it seemed like there was something that was being pushing him as this great actor. And then once that kind of cooled off is when he started having some movies that I didn't mind him in. Since then, however, I mean, he was pretty awful in Les Miserables.
Oh, yeah.
Really, Man of Steel was probably the second movie
yep.
after 310 to Yuma that I enjoyed him in, and that more of a bit role in there, and then not a whole lot since then. So really, as I talk myself in circles here, what I would say is peak Russell Crowe, I think, is pretty poor and criminally overrated. Post-peak Russell Crowe is probably underrated. And so that's an interesting career there, where the movies he will probably be most well-known for long after his time are the movies I'll tell people, yeah, he wasn't that good in. And the movies that people will forget that he was in, I'll say, actually, he wasn't that bad.
Well, he's hit the ultimate rock bottom now, though. This is how you really know where he's gotten to. In 2020, he did Unhinged, which is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in theaters.
I know where you're coming from on that. I think you, for whatever reason, like, chose to hate that movie. I don't think it's as bad as what you say, but
pay $10 and take a date to see that movie. Okay, you tell me that.
Right. That's going to add to it, because you were more highly invested in it than I was. But yes, it as a movie was not as bad as what I was thinking it was going to be based on some of the things you had told me about it.
And then now, this month, he has The Pope's Exorcist coming out. So he's now hit the point in his career where he is still a name that everybody knows, and he's doing a horror movie based on the Files of the Vatican, which, how many of those terrible movies have come out with a whole group of actors that nobody has heard of before and nobody will ever hear of again? So it's strange that he did kind of bounce back from the assault charges and all that stuff and still had success, and then he decided to put on 60 pounds and he's doing a horror movie. Yeah, see, that's no longer Brad. We're looking at the poster of The Pope's Exorcist. And
is that what you wore to church today? Is the real question.
So that is just strange to me, just kind of where he's gone and where he's ended up.
I have a comparison that this will probably resonate more with Mike than you, Ethan, but in some ways he feels to me like Jake the Snake Roberts. Like, had a career that for all intents and purposes was kind of at the top of the heap, just like Jake did. Jake had a huge falling out, drug and alcohol related, and then kind of later on turned his life around and has kind of this, I guess there's a show called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts. And I think maybe there's a spot now where Russell can do that and maybe come out with some things that are going to appeal to the audience, and maybe, kind of live out the next decade where he's got a few hits and you kind of remember those glory days, but you don't have to just think of that person from way back then. So I think as you were talking, that name just popped in my head as a comparison in a different genre when it comes to professional wrestling than movies, but very similar career arcs in a lot of ways.
I just am shocked that Jake Roberts is still alive. If you had played a game of Alive or Dead of wrestling stars from that era, I definitely would have had him as dead. So glad to hear you're still alive, breathing, and making a career resurrection that makes Brad compare you favorably to Russell Crowe there, Mr. Roberts. Keep on keeping on.
Well, and so on the flip side, we'll change over to talking about the other lead in this film, Ryan Gosling. I will say then, and I guess we can have this conversation, you kicked off Russell Crowe by saying overrated for the entirety of his career. I'll step in and say, from a fan's perspective, you just go up on the street and ask people Ryan Gosling, I'm going to say that he is a guy who is underrated for his career. I think 90% of people, if you say Ryan Gosling, the first thing they're going to go to is The Notebook. That is what put him on the map. That's what made him a superstar. And people still put him in that lens. And we've talked about him before with Crazy Stupid Love. That was a big ensemble movie, so I don't think we dove too deep into his entire career. This is a guy who is not just an A-level star in name brand. I think he's an A-level acting talent. Right around just the year after Notebook came out, he grabbed an Oscar nomination for a movie, Half Nelson. I saw it one time. It's a tough watch, but he is fantastic in it. And then you go through his career, and he is a great actor. We did talk about him with Crazy Stupid Love. Again, that's a rom-com. We can put that off to the side from this conversation. But The Ides of March, Place Beyond the Pines, Big Short, La La Land he got nominated for, Blade Runner 2049. maybe not movies that were financially successful and did as much for his name as The Notebook still has done almost 20 years later, all of those are fantastic performances, including this. I think something like this, too, gets left to the side because he's a goofball and he says funny things. It's harder to make people laugh than it is to make people cry. 100%, I think comedy is harder to pull off. And this kind of comedy, to still take his character somewhat seriously by the end of it and still believe that somehow he could have pulled off what he pulled off in this movie while being funny, I think is super impressive, and being a different kind of funny than what Russell Crowe is being. I think he's fantastic. I think he is one of the best in the game, and he's kind of slowed down his career. He did First Man in 2018, and then finally last summer had an action movie come out. So he's really, really slowed down. But I think he's great. I think he's great in this, and I wonder where you guys are at, because I would say underrated in terms of what people think of his true talent.
I don't really have anything smart that I can add to what you just said, so I'm going to defer to your opinion. I don't know enough about him or his career to really say where he stands. So I enjoy him, and I think that especially after seeing this one, and obviously if it being in my top 25, clearly I really enjoyed it and him, so I hope to see him in more things moving forward.
Yeah, I would have to say that most of the movies that you mentioned that he is really good in, I have not seen. And so I probably do have a lesser impression of him than I should, because I'm comparing him against, you know, the guy from The Notebook, Crazy Stupid Love, and I think that that's probably about it. I'm familiar with The Ides of March, but I've never seen it. Same with The Big Short. La La Land, all I know is about, isn't that the one that there was all the controversy about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan. It's right. The musical, and yeah. It's,
yeah. Blade Runner 2049, I never saw. First Man, I probably would enjoy, but I've never seen. But, you know, Brad, you're wanting to get more into his filmography, and I think that it's just probably time for the two of you to set a mandate to go see him in Barbie, which is coming out this year, as he is playing Ken.
I have already been told that I will be seeing that movie. And I'm going to do it because I am a loving and caring boyfriend.
So Brad can be the third wheel and the thing.
By all means.
Well, here's what you have to look forward to, Ethan. After you've been married for 20 years, when you get asked to go see a movie, if it's not one you want to see, you can just say no. And it's okay because it's not going to affect anything. So you have that to look forward to. In 20 years, you can say no to Barbie. Or you can say, you know what? Take the kids. Go enjoy it. You don't need to waste the money on a ticket for me, which I've done with some of the Marvel movies recently, where the three of them go and enjoy them, and I'm like, yep, I'm going to go do something else. So you've got that to look forward to in 20-plus years.
Well, I'll give a full review of Barbie here in a couple months on the show. Don't you worry, just so you know what it is. So I'll just, between the two of them, then, who wins this movie? If you had to pick between the two of them, Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling.
I'd say Gosling.
I think he's more enjoyable. But it's also watching it through that lens of, I don't want to like Russell Crowe, but you end up liking him in this. So maybe in some ways that would say he does win it because you don't dislike him at the end of this.
See, I was going to say, I think Gosling wins it, but similarly, and not to give Russell Crowe too much credit here, after I just tried to, you know, slam him and then talk myself back into him, Russell Crowe has the easy, or has, okay, I'm going to rethink my thoughts here. What I was trying to say before I got myself distracted, Gosling, I think, wins it, but he has the easier part to do it because he's allowed to win the movie. Crowe is more of the straight man that Gosling is playing off of. And so, I think Gosling wins the movie, but probably because it was set up that way.
Well, and I appreciate, like, how this could be such a one-note guy. Like, he's so stupid that he punched a window and slit his own wrist. Like, that's early on in the movie. We see that version. But then there's the moments where everybody's hating on him, everybody thinks he's an idiot, and he just stops and like, well, have fun going to the airport, because that's not where that's at. And then he lays out, like, he's a goofball, but he's actually not as stupid as he comes off. And I think he plays that part really well with the charisma, and I really like it. Behind the camera, we've talked about Shane Black with Lethal Weapon. Just a really weird, not weird, just an interesting career for him. Broke through writing Predator and Lethal Weapon, and that's how he got his name. He got all the way up to doing an Iron Man movie that not a lot of people like. I actually have a soft spot for Iron Man 3, and I think it's fun. I really think where Shane Black, you know, lives the best is this kind of film. You know, we see the buddy cop thing with Lethal Weapon. It kind of, this, I think it ends up being the better version of looking at that. I would assume that you guys both have Lethal Weapon ranked lower on your list than this. Maybe not you, Mike, with where you ended up having this at, but Brad, I know there's no way that you have Lethal Weapon in your top 30.
Way lower.
That's lower for me by a solid, by 12.
Okay,
Lethal
so
Weapon's
yeah, so,
right now at
yeah.
99.
Yeah, so, yeah, and I too just have Lethal Weapon just sneaking into the top 100. And then you look kind of in the middle of that. Have you, either of you guys ever seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
No.
That's like Robert Downey Jr. right around the time he's getting busted for cocaine. And it really is this movie. It is like kind of, he remade Kiss Kiss Bang Bang as this and just did it a little bit better. So that's where I think Shane Black should live. And he tried a few years ago to go back into making another Predator movie and just hasn't done anything since. So there's kind of that weird blend that he has to, it's an interesting career. He's had some success, but I think this is definitely the peak. Just if you're looking at Lethal Weapons and Predators and even Iron Man 3, things like that, I think this is probably the best we're ever going to see from him. Are there any other thoughts on that, or anybody else in the movie that stood out that you guys want to touch on before we do favorite line, favorite scene? A lot of characters that pop up. The daughter's great. I think she's really, really good hanging around with them, but I mean, nothing too major. So let's start favorite scene. We'll end with favorite line, because I know there are some pretty great funny lines here in this movie.
The favorite scene that came to my mind as I was reflecting on this movie was the scene where they're running from the guys and then ends up on the road. Russell yes. Crowe comes in and kills the guy, and then she comes back. There's just, I think, some pretty good acting in that one, and it moves the plot along pretty well. So I don't have deep thoughts on it. It's just the scene that stood out to me in my mind.
For me, you actually stole it just a couple minutes ago. It was the scene where Gosling punches the window and cuts his wrist, because it tells you everything you need to know about that character in that one action.
Yeah.
Like, he's brave but doesn't think things through, and he acts without, you know, having a good plan. And that one little, like, punch, and I laughed my butt off because he acted that perfectly. And obviously, you know, he's going to be okay, and he's not going to die from it, so it's kind of funny. But that just starts his whole, like, spiral of bad crap is going to happen to this guy throughout this whole thing. And I just thought that was hilarious when he puts his hand through that and bleeds all over.
That's up there. I would say the party scene, but Ryan Gosling drunk falling off of the balcony and then the dead body. And then I think the hardest, I laughed the first time I saw this, and still I think the funniest part of this whole movie is when they toss that body over the fence and it lands in the middle of that those people's party. That is, I don't know why that always gets, fun fact, that dead body is Robert Downey Jr. in makeup.
Really?
Yeah. And Robert Downey Jr. is still friends with Shane Black, and that's what that dead body is. That's got half of its face missing.
That now
is
that you Jr. now that you say that, I'm not surprised by that.
But yeah, so I think that's just that is just funny. Them tossing that body over the ledge and it landing there, that has to be my favorite part of the whole movie. But really, this is just one of those things where it's just the entire movie. Like, there's just not a spot where I just wish something was gone. Like, I really do just love the whole thing. So, favorite line, fellas. What is going to be your favorite line? This is really tough for me to pick, so I don't know, Mike, if you have one queued up and you can just maybe take something out of the running for me.
Yeah, sure, I can go with this one. Look on the bright side, nobody got hurt. And he just responds, people got hurt. It's like, I'm saying, I think they died quickly, so I don't think they got hurt. Yes.
That was one of the ones in the running, so thank you.
Yeah, that he actually took mine. That's what I was going to go with. There might be another one that comes to me while you're talking, Ethan, but if not, I'll just pass, because Mike was able to take mine.
He said at one point, he says, I think I'm invincible. It's the only thing that makes sense. I don't think I can die. I think it's after he falls into the pool. Like, just that, and that is, like you said, it's just his demeanor. Like, maybe I'm just invincible. I don't know, guys. This doesn't make sense. Like, I keep getting out of this. I think the favorite conversation is when, and I don't know her name, but the the one, the evil, the bad lady that's in it, the black woman that's in it. Don't know her name, don't know her character's name, but when she's holding him at gunpoint in the hotel room, and he's like, well, you don't want to kill people. She just said she killed three people. Don't paint her with that brush. You have no idea what she's been through. Just there, like, he still just, like, thinks she's hot, so he's going to flirt with her, even though she's obviously a terrible person. And I think that's what I'm talking about with the chemistry of just, like, that their back and forth is great. Unspoken. And maybe the best part of acting is when they slowly step off the elevator and the guy gets shot and falls out the window and they step back and just Ryan Gosling starts, like, shaking and almost crying. Like, that is, I think, just the best, like, image in the whole movie. But so, I mean, Mike, you probably did end up just taking ours with the... No one got hurt. They died fast. Like,
yeah, it was a pretty good one.
And her name is Tally.
Tally. Okay, that is... Now I remember it, now that you've said it. So that'll do it. That is favorite line, favorite scene from The Nice Guys. I hope you guys enjoyed that, your first experience getting to see it, and anybody else that got to watch it for the first time.
I will say, if anyone's listening to this that has not seen it, you're just checking it out to hear what we have to say about it first, go watch it. It's very underrated. I know Mike's number is much, I guess, you call it higher in value than ours, but... as far as rankings go, lower. And I think, though, that's okay. We're all going to have different opinions. No one's got this in the bottom, you know, 10 or 15. But I think that it's one of those that you need to check out, because clearly not enough people saw it in the theater. Yes. So, yeah, go check it out.
But, yeah, so that will do it. That will wrap up our conversation of The Nice Guys. Next week, we get to finish off the month. Mike will be taking me on in the Rotten Tomatoes game to reclaim his throne with his pick for the month of May, Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. So the first time we're going to dip our toe into the Star Wars world. It's quite the place to have conversations in. It gets a little heated on the internet. I don't really think that's going to happen for us, but we will see next week when we talk about Star Wars Revenge of the Sith. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show, guys. Other than that, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.